way they pick TV shows is they make one show. That show's called a pilot. Then they show that one show to the people who pick shows. And on the strength of that one show, they decide if they want to make more shows. Some get chosen and become television programs. Some don't. Become nothing.
Hello and welcome to Drop the Pilot, a podcast dedicated to TV pilots that became nothing. I'm Jimmy.
And I am Tisto. And today we will be discussing Tickets, Please. It aired as part of the CBS Summer Playhouse on September 6, 1988. It stars Cleavon Little, Marcia Strassman, David Marciano, and Yardley Smith. If you don't know any of those people, or even one of those people, you are not my friend.
No, exactly. That's why I put those four names down there, because I know every single one of them.
It's a fabulous cast.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Bill Macy is here. Not William H. Macy, but no, Bill Macy from Maude and Harold Gould. And yeah, it's great.
Yeah. It was written by Charlie Peters, who is primarily a movie screenwriter. He wrote the scripts for Blame It on Rio, the one where Michael Caine... has a sexual relationship with his friend's teenage daughter.
Right.
Hot to Trot? I think that's...
No, no, that's Bobcat Goldthwait.
Bobcat Goldthwait.
I was thinking of Let It Ride. Sorry, right. No. I was going to say, I love that movie. But no.
No. Her Alibi, which is Tom Selleck. Yeah. And Three Men and a Little Lady, which is also Tom Selleck.
Oh, yeah.
It was directed by Art Dielman, I think, who has got no other credits on IMDb bar this.
Yeah, television directing is weird. It is very strange that they would have a guy direct who hadn't done anything else, but who knows?
Unless it's a mistake on IMDb, that is known to happen.
Oh, that's possible too, you're right, yeah. Yeah, because that name does sound familiar, Art Dielman.
But that's the only one I can find on IMDb. So, Tisto, what did you think of Tickets, Please?
You know, as I said, it's a great cast. It had a couple of laughs in it. Mm-hmm. It was really fun to see Yardley Smith. And Marcia Strassman, of course, from Welcome Back, Kotter.
And Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Cleavon Little, he didn't have anything to do. I was really disappointed in that. David Marciano didn't really have anything to do. But, yeah, overall, it really fails in the second half. And didn't like it.
Okay, all right. Yeah, no, it's not good. But it does have a couple of funny moments, I do think.
Yeah.
There was a couple of times I chuckled. There was a couple of good lines. But then, yeah, man, that second half. Woo!
Yeah. I mean, they come back to the same jokes over and over. And the idea of the story is a real downer. And in addition to the fact that the setting itself doesn't make any sense, it was like a bottle episode of a good TV show.
That's exactly what it's like. I mean, you know, I'm a sucker for these kind of sitcoms.
Yep.
With like elaborate sets and stuff like that, and you know, settings that aren't just like a house or
right.
You know, I like those kind of things. And I did like this initially. I was like, oh, this is actually quite interesting. But then as it went on, it was like, yeah, can we go somewhere else?
Just, yeah, I thought we would be out in the ticket booth and the, you know, people coming and going in the station and then sometimes on the train. No, it's just on the train.
It's entirely on the train. Exactly the same set the entire 23 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine if it carried on in a series, we would have had other sets. We would have had, you know, more money to put into it to make other sets.
Where was this in relation to Cheers? Because it feels like they're trying to do Cheers.
They're trying to do a Cheers-like thing, yeah. But Cheers was 1982.
Oh, wow.
So I think Cheers would have been in its sixth season, maybe, right about this time.
Yeah, so deep into that.
So, yeah, no, they're absolutely trying to do that kind of thing with just the one setting and I mean, there's even a fucking bar.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, no, it's really strange. And you said, you mentioned Yardley Smith. She would have been about early 20s here.
24, I think
looked it up. 24, 23 roughly. Depends when it was filmed. But yeah, she would have been in her early 20s here.
famous, of course, famous for Herman's Head.
Yes.
No.
Herman's Head and nothing else. She's done nothing else since.
Lisa Simpson from The Simpsons, yes.
Yes, she's eternally Lisa Simpson, forever and ever.
669 episodes at this point of The Simpsons. 30-something years, yeah.
Yeah, and a movie as well, yeah. Okay, so let's go through this quote-unquote plot. We meet Sal and Paula, who are ticket conductors. They're arguing. Sal thinks so little of Paula because she's training to be a lawyer. See, that sort of thing annoyed me.
Yeah.
I didn't like Sal.
He's a terrible character. I mean, he's kind of a bad person, but he's just also, he's the guy that we just keep coming back to, the same joke over and over again. He doesn't like using the microphone.
Yeah.
That's a stupid joke.
It was a stupid plot line for him. It was just nothing. It was just, oh. And then because of that, it also gave Yardley Smith less to do.
Right, yes.
All she did was react to him.
Right.
And just make faces at him. And it was like, yeah, give her more things to do. Anyway, the bartender, for some reason there's a bartender, his name is Bake.
Yeah, this is a bar car or a,
yeah, that's what
a
it is,
bar
yeah.
coach on the commuter train in, I guess, is it New York City? I guess
it's New York, yeah, because they go to Grand Central.
Yeah, okay.
Bake sides with Sal because he's never getting out, but Paula is. Yeah, I don't like that at all. That's sort of like belittling someone because they're doing better than you.
Yeah.
And then Bake sides with Sal because of that. It's like, well, he can do it too. But, hey-ho. That's not what Sal's like. That's not Sal's character. Sal's the eternal loser, I think, is the whole point of Sal.
Well, the lifelong train guy. His father and grandfather were train guys before him. I don't know what they call him. I come from a small town. I don't ride trains.
No. And Paula is only 24 years old.
And cute as a button, too, isn't she? God.
I know. She's so tiny.
Yeah. And,
Ted enters the train and complains about his wife. It's another terrible character, Ted.
Oh, that's, yeah, Ted. Yeah, he is the worst character, right? Yeah.
Sal returns and Paula suggests he goes to night school, but he says that he's too stupid. Sam, an older gentleman, enters and Ted asks him about the car that he was driving. It was his daughter's because his battery died. That's a joke, apparently.
Yeah, the too stupid line was also a laugh line. It's like, those are not good jokes.
No. And Bake sits down to talk with them. I don't think he'd be allowed to do that, but he does. You kind of have to in these sitcoms, though, don't you?
You're right, yes.
You have to have your cast interact with each other. Yeah, Cleavon Little isn't given much to do here, is he? At all?
No, again, he's just kind of reacting to these other characters. I suppose he was supposed to be a bit like the Coach character on... But, I mean, he's not dumb like Coach. I mean, that was the fun. That was the humor of Coach, was that he was always slow on the uptake. But, or maybe, well, I guess maybe he's supposed to be Ted Danson in you know, he's supposed to... Because Ted Danson didn't do a lot of the time. I don't know, it took a while for his character to get going. On that show, it seems like. Eventually, he became, like, obviously, sort of the star. But for a while there, it was a real ensemble piece, and I don't know.
Yeah, because this is why you picked this one to do on such short notice, is because of Cleavon Little, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was fabulous in Blazing Saddles. Mm-hmm. And I always wondered, like, why didn't he become... bigger. He was in Vanishing Point in a really interesting role, but boy, oh boy.
Yeah, he died not that long after this, actually. I think he died in 92.
92, that's true. Yeah, 53 years old.
Yeah, it's a shame. Today I discovered that Marcia Strassman, she also passed away.
Yes, I think so.
I just discovered that today when I was looking up what else I'd seen her in, and I was like, oh yeah, that's her for Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. She's the mum. Oh, she passed away. That's so sad.
Let me say about Cleavon Little that he was plagued by ulcers and stomach disorders for most of his life and died of colon cancer. So,
Jesus.
But it may have been other health problems that kept him from being a bigger star.
Yeah. Oh, it's a shame. He is a talented man.
Yeah.
Bake says he found the checkbook belonging to Jack, who's another passenger. But while trying to find him, he found out that Jack has lost his job 3 weeks ago. Paula says that he's actually been on the train those 3 weeks. So, you know, something fishy's gone on. Beck phone Jack's house, but his wife still thinks that he's working.
Right.
You know, that's our plot. There we go, ladies and gentlemen. We have the plot for today's episode.
Yeah, it's right out of 1932. That's what happened in the Great Depression. But I don't know. It's happening in the go-go 80s for some reason.
Sal is shouting out the next stop, and Beck tells him to use the microphone. Sal says it makes people sound like Max Headroom, which I kind of smiled at because someone mentioned Max Headroom.
I laughed at that too.
Beck convinces Sal to talk into the microphone by telling him to just be himself. And also he sort of insults Paula slightly. which again, just Paula's... I mean, Paula doesn't really do much. And everybody seems to sort of dunk on Paula for being... for pushing to be something better than, you know, a conductor on a train. But she never actually gets to interact with anyone to counteract anything. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's all like, oh, Paula this, Paula that. But she doesn't actually... She's not part of that conversation. She's always... Her only part of this is to walk past every now and then and shout, what, station's next?
That's her main lines, yeah.
And then make a little, you know, snarky comment about Ginger not getting a job later or something like that.
It feels a little bit like Night Court. And she's the Marky Post character, you know, except she's not given as much to do as Marky Post. Or maybe she's the Marshall Warfield character, the, you know, Roz.
All right.
The bailiff. The other bailiff who never got anything to do character.
I think they were maybe trying to go for, like, a Carla from Cheers.
Oh, possible. Yes, that's true.
Anyway, Elaine enters the train holding a video camera. Her daughter's psychiatrist has her film her day to show her kid where she goes every day when she abandons her. Which is quite strange.
Yeah. Like, that's not a bad conceit for the pilot of a show set in a train. Like, I'm going to film the train, and I'm going to tell you about my day and that kind of thing. Like, that's not a bad conceit, but they don't use it to any successful end.
She doesn't film anything else. She films herself going into the train. She doesn't... She films... like, a couple of the characters, so we, the audience, know who they are.
Right, yeah, Bill Macy, yeah.
Yeah, and what they do, and then that's it. She doesn't use the camera again. She should be using the camera the entire time, if that's the conceit of her character for this pilot. But
well, I got the impression that she was just filming enough to show the train, and then she's going to also film at the office, and then... You know, I don't know if they're, you know, that she's not trying to film her entire day or her entire commute or anything, but
no,
it was okay.
Sure. No, it wasn't.
It didn't help. It didn't do anything.
No, it didn't do anything. It didn't really hurt either, to be fair. Right. It was just there. It was kind of pointless. It was just like, video cameras are a thing. It's 1988. Video cameras are a thing. People own these at home. So, Ted is being a sex pest to Elaine.
Yeah.
Despite just renewing his wedding vows. Ted's terrible. He gives Paula money for a ticket, and when Paula asks if he has anything smaller, Elaine quips, "I bet he does." Penis joke.
Yeah.
We're not even appreciating the penis joke there, Testo.
It was okay for this kind of a show.
Yeah. Got a reaction from the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's just... I mean, is there an audience?
Yeah.
It's a shot before a live audience?
Yes, it says in the end credits. Filmed before a live audience at Fox Television Studios or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it could easily just have been a laugh track. But no, it's an actual audience. Sal shouts really loudly into the microphone just as Ginger enters. She says that she'll help him as she's an actress. She has an audition for a laxative commercial.
Yeah, that was a kind of funny joke. It's this very romantic... She describes this very romantic commercial, and then she says it's for a laxative. And it's like, okay, it's okay.
Yeah, it's not bad. They get to Franklin Station and wait for Jack to come on, and they fill Ginger in on what's happening. I know these people sort of know each other from, like, on the train every single day.
Right.
But maybe they should just stay at each other's fucking business.
Exactly. It's not a bar. People aren't coming here to socialize.
They're just going to and from work. It doesn't matter what Jack's going through. Let him go through it himself. Leave him alone. You're not even his friends, really.
Yeah, you know,
you're just a bunch of nosy bastards. Just leave it.
Well, they do sit together because there are other people in this car.
Yeah.
Right? But we only pay any attention at all to these, whatever, five or six.
Yeah, that's true. Bake tells everyone to act normal, but when Jack appears, they all act weird because comedy.
Right.
Ginger goes off to help Sal talk into the microphone by telling him to use an experience that is troubling to him. That's not a very good sentence you've written there, Jimmy. Anyway, she helps him with the microphone.
It's a super dumb scene, yeah.
That's only there to give Ginger something to do.
Right, yes.
Because everyone else is dealing with the Jack thing. And she just goes off to talk to Sal, who's already had his lines. But Ginger hasn't had any lines, so that's the only reason why that's there, I think.
Yeah, and Ginger doesn't sit at the table, and that's the arc of the character at the end of the episode. She gets invited to sit at the table.
Exactly. Like, okay. Although, but when she first goes there, she puts her stuff at the table.
Oh, she did? I didn't notice that.
Yeah,
okay.
She takes her jacket and that off and sits it at the table. So that's why I was like, well, she's already there. But, yeah, anyway. Bake says he has an idea to get Sam to admit that he was fired. Again, it's not your problem issue. It doesn't matter. Sal sadly announces that Grand Central was next and says that it's his mother's fault for not letting him play football.
Yeah, because he's accidentally still holding the microphone.
I don't think it's accidentally. I think he's just talking, and because he's talking to the women next to him, and I think he's just, you know, I don't think it's accidental. I think he's actually meaning for people to hear it, which is, you know, sadder. On the way back and the end of the workday, Sal now basically does stand up on the microphone.
It's like, okay, we're here in town, and everybody gets off, and then they cut, and I guess there's a commercial, and then it, like, okay, it's the end of the workday, and everybody's gonna get back on. It's like, what?
Yeah,
this is the whole show.
That's, yeah. How weird would that be to tune into that every week? Just seeing these people go to work, then a commercial, and then seeing the people go home from work. It's like, what? That's
such a terrible idea.
And I don't know how long the journey's supposed to take, but I do like the fact that they all come on at different stops.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
They don't all come on at the same time. Because they're not friends, they don't live together, they don't, right, you know, share an apartment. So I do like that, but yeah, it's just a really strange setup for a sitcom. If they wanted this to be weekly, then I'd imagine they would have to have had something else.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense that they all get on the same train to go home, because one of them is an actress. She wouldn't have an audition that would take all day. Every day? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I was thinking that as well. What does she do for the other days? How do they know her? Because if she's just looking for work and she's going into New York to do auditions, she can't have auditions at the exact same time every single day.
Right.
For her to be part of the group.
And it wouldn't be all day.
Exactly. Yeah, it makes no sense. And then we see when we come back from the commercial break and the train's on the way back, Paula takes her jacket off. So she's been off the train. She takes her normal jacket off and then puts her work jacket back on. So where was she?
That rings a bell. Yeah, that is weird. You're right, that doesn't make sense.
Doesn't the train keep going like all throughout the day?
Yeah, it just goes back and forth all day.
Yeah, so it's not as though the train sat in Grand Central Station for the entire day to pick these people back up. It's not their personal train. So yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all. So did Paula just get off the train when everybody else got off, went and did some shopping, and then come back at 5 o'clock the same as everyone else?
She went to a law class or something, I don't know,
yeah,
I guess.
Maybe. I mean, they did say she's only part-time. But,
You're right. Yeah. Because she's going to law school. You're right. She is literally part time. So maybe that is the answer. I don't know.
Maybe she works the train, gets off, goes to law school, and then goes back on the train and works the train on the way home. Maybe, I don't know.
That doesn't make sense. Yeah, it would be 3 days on and 2 days off or something more likely. I don't know. Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, oh, Ginger didn't get the part. I know we were all just hooked waiting for the result of that storyline.
Yes.
we can pretty much just sort of shoot through the final 10 minutes of this because nothing really happens. But they convince Jack to admit that he's been fired and then make him feel better about telling his wife by telling him that their life sucks too. Except nobody told Ted to pretend that he's really emotional and everyone makes fun of him. The toast to Jack, Lisa Simpson shouts, "Tickets, please," the end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the last 10 minutes of the pilot.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the whole plot is in the last 10 minutes, really. Like, let's get him to admit that he's been fired and tell his wife and then go off and go fly fishing for the rest of his life because he's old enough to retire. So yeah. Why would he be doing this?
Yeah. Exactly. He's old enough to retire. He's probably going to retire soon anyway. So.
Yeah. Do we know what kind of a job he had?
He worked in a bank. He worked in banking.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The bank guy. So, yeah, he's got plenty of money. I don't know. Yeah, and Cleavon Little, Bake, says he was a banker too?
Yeah, he was a banker. That's how he knows Jack.
Yeah. He was a vice president at a bank, and they used to commute together. And then he left voluntarily, and he decided to work as a bartender on a train. It's the stupidest idea.
Yeah,
that really is like Cheers, isn't it? Because he used to be a baseball player, and then he bought a bar.
Yeah, that's right.
That actually made sense.
That made sense. Yeah, but to leave your high-paying job as a bank executive because your wife died to work as a bartender on a train. Yeah, that's not exactly life goals, is it?
It is a really weird choice, yeah.
But that was just to give A, Cleavon Little more to do, and B, because he has top build, and
right.
B, to give, you know, some background, some story to the character of Bake. And that's basically it. That's the entire thing. That last 10 minutes, because I was not really enjoying the first 10 minutes, but there was a couple of good lines, and I was like, okay, this is not too bad. I see what they're doing here. And I thought maybe that we would be off the train in the second half.
Right.
But then the second half, all it is just them just talking to Jack about this one thing. That's the entire final 10 minutes.
And they're talking to him about themselves. They're all just like, I hate my life. My life is terrible. And it's like, join us next week for more of these people and their lives that they hate.
Yeah. Although they all said that they were pretending apart from Ted.
Except that they all have already complained about their lives in exactly the same way.
Exactly. So they do all hate their lives.
Yes.
This is one miserable pilot. This is 23 minutes of actual misery and depression, and it's terrible. And they wanted to make this every week. Hey, your life sucks, so let's watch these people whose life also suck on a train going to their destination, going to their work, which they hate every single day, and then going home at the end of the night to their homes, which they also hate.
Yeah, it's like the opposite of Cheers. Remember, the whole idea of Cheers is sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name and you're away from the rat race, right?
Yeah.
And this is like, no, we're actually in the rat race. It's right here. and it's horrible. We hate it.
Yeah, but also in Cheers, well, see, the conceit of the... I'm not getting off this, by the way, but the conceit of the train thing just really annoyed me. Because it's only the one journey. At least with Cheers, you could set it over a different day, couple of nights. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it'll be one night, and then they'll close up the bar, and then the second part can be the next day or whatever.
Right.
But this was just too much. And if they wanted to be like Cheers, they kind of forgot one vital thing about Cheers. Cheers, mm-hmm. well, two. Cheers is well written, and B, Cheers had well written, good, likable characters. This doesn't have that.
Yeah, you can clearly see what they were going for, mm-hmm. and it just doesn't gel. Ted is a terrible character, and he's also, like, for some reason got some of the most, he's got the most lines. Mm-hmm. There's a big arc for his character. It's just, he's not a good actor, really. He's the real weak link, and he's the biggest, most important part of it.
He's the one that just sits there and just constantly makes jokes. He's the Chandler Bing of before Friends actually happened, but he's the Chandler of the group where everything somebody says has to have a joke by Ted at the end of it.
Well, except that his jokes are like 80% of them are these unpleasant sex jokes.
Oh, no, I'm not saying they were any good. I'm just saying right. That's the way he's written.
Yeah.
That's the way he's written. It's like whoever wrote, what's his name again? Somebody, Peters, that guy who wrote Her
Charlie
Alibi.
Peters.
Aye, him that wrote Her Alibi. And Hot to Fucking Trot. He obviously thought that Ted was funny enough.
Oh, yeah, right, yes.
Yeah, to give Ted all these lines.
Well, and most of those lines, are, to his credit, are meant to set up Marcia Strassman's character, Elaine, to shoot him down. That's the night court aspect, right?
That's
because
true.
That's what, right? That's what, what was his character's name?
I don't know. Night court. You're talking about something I'm not familiar with.
Oh, you were not familiar with night court. Oh, okay. Gosh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I've heard of it.
Yeah. I got to bring it up. John Larroquette's character, Dan, mm-hmm. Was the guy who was making sex jokes all the time, and he would get shut down by Marky Post's character and everything. But it worked because John Larroquette is John Larroquette. He's a fantastic actor, and it was a well-written show.
And he's also quite charming as well.
Very charming guy.
But Ted here is not just setting up Elaine's jokes. It's also when they're talking to Jack, and he's the one that's always saying, "Do you have something to tell us, Jack? Blah, blah, blah." You know what I mean? Do you want to get something off your chest, Jack? And the audience are laughing and laughing because they're in on the joke and they know that Jack does have something to say. But I'm just sitting there going, shut up, Ted! Leave the man alone! Just leave him alone! The second half of this, I was actually getting really annoyed at it because of the way that they had the characters act, and it just wasn't funny.
The last thing I would point out too is this really kind of awkward thing that I don't think that they ever intended. They just weren't sensitive to it. The fact that the one black guy in the cast is the servant who's behind the counter as the bartender.
Yeah, but he's also supposed to be the quote-unquote wisest one of them all.
Right.
I didn't really get that, but
right.
He's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And
he's supposedly the one who came up with the idea that solves the problem.
Yeah.
Except that we didn't actually see that happen.
No. He just said, "I've got an idea and it involves everyone," and then cut to them all telling Jack that their life sucks, and it's like, yeah.
And then at the end of that, saying it was Bake who came up with the idea, and that was it.
Yeah, yeah. It's like anyone could come up with that idea, though. It's just talking to the man. You know what I mean? If that's a great idea, Bake. Talk to him. Well done. You're the wisest one of us all, Bake. Jesus Christ. Are we agreed?
Yep.
Yay.
Terrible theme music.
Oh, yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Jaunty, happy tune. And it's like, you know, it's not really setting you up for the actual misery of the show.
Yeah. And that's in contrast to both Cheers and Night Court, which had sort of legendarily good themes. I mean, Cheers in particular, that's a song that people like to listen to by itself as a song. I mean, they sing it in school choirs and stuff like that. It's weird.
It was released as a single, that song.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Gary Portnoy. He released that as a single, and then it was on one of his albums as well. So yeah, that's a good theme tune though. The theme to Cheers was actually, it was written for like just what you hear as an actual song, but then it became an actual show, sorry, and then it became so popular, people liked listening to it, that they wrote a couple of more verses and then released it as a single.
Hmm.
So, yeah. The power of the people. And the power of the people who made sure that we never got to see any more Tickets, Please. Yeah.
The wisdom of crowds.
Yay. Oh, dear. Anyway, that's finished. Thank goodness. That's all we have time for. I'd like to thank Tisto for joining me again. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, if you'd like to follow the podcast, Facebook, Twitter, at Drop the Pilot Pod, send us an email, droppthepilotpod@gmail.com. Where can the listeners find you on the internet there, Tisto?
Oh, you'll find me at Tisto Zarban on Twitter and at Tisto.com, TYSTO.com.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it. That's it. See, that's what this pilot does. It's like, yeah, okay, we're done. We're finished. Let's end it now. Right, so thank you all for listening, and I'll see you all next time. Goodbye.